From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Happy Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, folks. Man, thank goodness we aren't in the Northeast, right? Well, we technically are, but not really. We kind of dodged this whole blizzard and snowstorm that is hammering places like New York and D.C. I mean, my goodness, if you have not seen the photos, I mean, they are jaw-dropping, folks. So I tell you what, so far this winter has been pretty cool and easy compared to last winter. But let's not hold our breath, okay? But we've got a great show in store for you today, folks. In just a moment, we'll be talking about the MSU and Rutgers game getting postponed, and maybe this will be looked at as a blessing in disguise for the Spartans. We'll talk about that. Also, we'll dive into the NCAA academic violations for several schools. That's right, 20 schools are currently being investigated by the NCAA and possibly giving student-athletes passes when it comes to their work in the classroom. We'll talk about that. Also, a special Top 5 Tuesday for you folks as we list the Top 5 Super Bowl commercials of all time. Yeah, that's going to be a fun one, folks. And we also invite MMA fighter and amputee Ronald Mann right here live in the studio to talk about his welterweight championship title bout in which he won this past Saturday and so much more. Do not touch that dial, folks. Let's start the show like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this January 27th. All right, let's start with the MSU men's basketball game with Rutgers, which was scheduled for Tuesday night but was canceled as the East Coast is hit very, very hard with snow. Now, the game has been rescheduled for 6 p.m. this Thursday and will be the final game for the Spartans before they take on in-state rival Michigan on Sunday. And here's some sad news, folks. Two EMU students were killed over the weekend in a head-on crash in Ypsilanti Township. Now, the two students identified were 23-year-old Jordan Hopkins of Dexter and 21-year-old Shanice Hetty of Hazel Crest, Illinois. Now, Hetty was a member of Eastern Michigan's women's basketball team, and she also was highly recruited by Michigan State University. Susie Merchant also gave comment yesterday as to the loss, and really shocking news for her, the Spartan community, and of course, the Eagles community. So our thoughts and prayers go out to both of their families on behalf of all of us here at WKAR. All right, local athlete Hannah Miller placed ninth in the USA National Figure Skating Competition over the weekend, a senior at Williamston. Miller has competed in the event twice before, coming in 10th in 2013 and 9th in 2014. All right, true greatness isn't restricted to Cooperstown. It can be found everywhere from little leagues to the major leagues. Now, on Wednesday, the Lansing Lugnuts and City of Lansing will proudly announce the establishment of the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame, giving fans a voice and honoring the very best in both baseball and Michigan. Now, the inarguable class and Hall of Famers will come from a ballot compiled from public nominations voted upon by a 9-member committee of Michigan baseball experts. Now, that announcement will take place tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Cooley Law School Stadium. I will be in the house and will have a report from that on WKAR tomorrow. So keep your eyes tuned to our website, folks. All right, the Detroit Pistons return to action tonight against the King. That's right, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, the Pistons are coming off a 114-110 loss to the Toronto Raptors on Sunday, which was the first game without point guard Brandon Jennings, who prior to that injury was playing out of his mind. So Brandon is out for the rest of the season with that Achilles heel injury. The game tonight will air on Fox Sports Detroit. Tip-off is at 7:30 p.m. And the Detroit Red Wings are also in action tonight with their kicking off their post All-Star weekend schedule with a game against the Florida Panthers. Now, the Wings, winners of 7 of their last 8 heading into the All-Star break, and sit in second place in the Atlantic Division standings, just 1 point behind the Eastern Conference leading Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, game time is set for 7:30 as well, and that game can be seen on FSD Plus. All right, the NFL has reportedly identified a locker room attendant that took the AFC Championship game balls from the New England Patriots locker room prior to the game. Now, the person in question was seen on video entering a bathroom with the balls before exiting a short time later. Interesting stuff. We'll have more on that later on in the show. Rafael Nadal has defeated, he was defeated in the Australian Open action on Monday. The world's third-ranked player, Nadal, was beaten in straight sets by Tomas Berdychi. Now, Nadal was struggling with fitness in the tournament, and he is coming off a wrist injury and appendix surgery. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open right now. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything that is on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot us a comment there and I'll read it live on the air, or I will read your tweet live on the air if you tweet me at Al Martin WKR. And if you don't want to tweet me, hey, just leave me a comment or a tweet. And hey, that's all you have to do. I tell you what, folks, we got a fantastic show though. I'm very excited because anytime I talk to this man, it is one of the best interviews I've ever done. I feel like I said it every single time I interview him. His name is Ronald Mann. He is a mixed martial artist who also is an amputee. Of course, Ronald, for those of you who have tuned in into current sports throughout these past few months, we actually profiled Ronald not too long ago. And Ronald lost his leg in a motorcycle accident quite some time ago now and has embarked on one unbelievable career in the world of mixed martial arts fighting. Now, Ronald had a big, big match this past Saturday at the Lansing Center in which he broke his opponent's arm, folks, and acquired the welterweight championship belt. How about that? I mean, man, that is such a brutal, brutal sport. Every time I think about, you know, Ronald breaking this guy's arm, I just kind of get chills up my spine. I could never do what Ronald and all of those other fighters do. It is certainly a brutal sport. But with it comes, I tell you what, a lot of respect on both ends of the spectrum. So Ronald is actually going to join us in studio during our second segment of the show to talk about that fight, to talk about his mindset going into a fight. If there is ever any fear when it comes to the risk that come with fighting in general, it's going to be a very intriguing interview, folks. And he's going to also talk about the belt. The belt will actually be in the house. Ronald is on his way to the studio right now with the championship belt. And we'll actually post a picture of that on our Facebook page, Twitter page, and even my Instagram page. Okay, I got to see this thing. I've never really seen a championship belt in person. So that should be pretty cool, folks. Again, folks, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527 is the number to call in throughout this entire hour to voice your thoughts on anything. I want to remind you all that Ken Manny will join me on tomorrow night's Current Sports TV taping. Ken Manny is the head strength and conditioning coach at Michigan State University. He's actually the longest tenured head strength and conditioning coach in the Big Ten Conference. He's been doing it for quite some time, and if you've ever seen Ken or seen him in action on the Big Ten Network, they actually profiled him on The Journey not too long ago. He is one of the most intense individuals you'll ever meet in your life, folks. So it's going to be fantastic as Ken will be in the house. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, all you got to do is crack open that laptop or desktop, whatever it may be, or even your phone, and go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. Again, tomorrow night's taping starts at 6:30 p.m., but the doors open, like always, at 6 p.m. Well, you know, to start the show, I didn't get a chance to salute this unbelievable icon in the world of sports because we ran out of time. But I would be remiss if I didn't start my show by doing just that. I want to shout out Coach Mike Krzyzewski, who is the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils. Of course, Coach K accomplished something that's never been accomplished in Division I men's basketball history, and that is accrue 1,000 wins at that level. I mean, that is unbelievable. And it just kind of put in perspective what Coach K's accomplishment means to the game and means to his legacy. I mean, folks, overall, the man is 1,308. That is his record. I mean, 1,000 wins and 300 losses is a fan, just a phenomenal win percentage, folks. Of course, his coaching career is now in his 40th year. It actually started back in 1975 at his alma mater. Not a lot of people know that Coach K is a product of Army. How about that? So he started coaching at Army. Now, and of course, his coaching career led him to the Duke Blue Devils. And I tell you what, a powerhouse, folks. In 35 seasons of coaching at Duke, his record there is 927 and 249. Just completely mind-boggling, folks. He's won 4 national titles, 11 Final Fours, and you know what? Kind of comparing it to, of course, the local legend here in East Lansing. I call him the president of Lansing, if you will, Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo has around 400 wins, folks. That just kind of puts in perspective. 1,000 for Coach K, around 400 for Tom Izzo. I mean, that just shows you the type of work that Coach K has put in. Now, granted, of course, Coach K is older, and he's been coaching 20 more years than Tom Izzo. I'm sure if Tom Izzo keeps coaching for that long, he will get close to that milestone himself, but still remarkable nonetheless, folks. Again, 4 national titles, 11 Final Fours. Coach K certainly etching himself as, you know, I would probably put him up there as the greatest college basketball coach to ever coach. Point blank, period. And now him and only Pat Summitt are the only two. Of course, Pat, longtime women's Division I basketball coach over at the University of Tennessee. Him and Pat Summitt are the only coaches in Division I basketball to eclipse that 1,001K mark. Pat Summitt actually has 1,098 victories. So hats off to Coach K, though. That is a remarkable accomplishment. Jim Boeheim certainly will, you know, in time, if he keeps on coaching, also hit that mark as well. But it is certainly a remarkable mark. Anytime you talk about 1,000 victories in anything, I mean, that's pretty special, pretty special. So hats off to Coach K, my man. That's fantastic stuff. All right, folks, well, let's move on now. I want to briefly talk about the MSU and Rutgers game getting postponed to Thursday because I really think, ladies and gentlemen, that this is a blessing in disguise for the Spartans. I mean, especially coming off a loss where you're on the road and again, a tough loss in conference to Nebraska. And, you know, just days later, 2 days later, you have to play, again, on the road, a Rutgers team, again, which is one of the bottom feeders in the Big Ten. I tell you what, Tom Izzo right now needs as much time as he can get when trying to figure out what to tweak, how to tweak it, as far as getting this team back on the winning page. Because right now, I mean, I tell you what, it was really shocking to me listening to the post-game press conference yesterday at the Breslin Center. And Tom Izzo, a coach who historically never plays zone defense, who in many, many respects despises it. Hey, he came out and said, yeah, you may see some zone from here on out, folks, especially during this game against Rutgers. You know, and again, this is Tom Izzo. I mean, there are a lot of coaches out there, and I said this yesterday, there are a lot of coaches out there who believes that playing zone defense is, for lack of better terms, lazy. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it allows you to take a rest, you know. It allows you to space your guys out, not having to chase one player around that half-court offense. And it allows you to sit in that zone, and depending on which zone you're playing, whether it be a 1-2-2 or 2-3 or 3-2, It allows a team to be pressured into one aspect of their game, whether it be shooting or forcing them to drive. So, I mean, right now, and again, Tom Izzo teams are historically known for playing defense, folks. It's what they do. If there are two things you can pretty much guarantee that a Tom Izzo coach team is going to be doing, it's rebounding and it is playing tough defense. And the defense, let's be honest here, the defense has not been great for Michigan State throughout this stretch, dating back to, I always go back to that Indiana game because I felt as though that Indiana game, the 20-point win over Indiana, was the best win that Michigan State had all year. But since then, the defense hasn't been there, folks. Heck, the offense hasn't been there really all year. So, hey, and they play. You know, it's funny because Tom Izzo talked about how they have played zone already in two games. But us media members didn't even know it. He said he disguised it and kind of fooled us all. He played it in the Northwestern game and also against Penn State. I didn't notice it. I'm not sure if you guys even noticed it, but it maybe was a half-hearted zone, okay? I have no idea. But it's going to be interesting now because, again, now Tom Izzo has extra time, an extra practice day to get things in order, to test the toughness of his team in practice, and to, you know, hold a few meetings maybe with certain players, I should say. They need all the time they can get. This could be a blessing in disguise for Tom Izzo, folks. So even though the game got postponed, maybe Tom should be thanking Mother Nature right now. I don't know. But for me, and, you know, I was asked yesterday via Twitter whether or not I have a X factor for this team. Who really needs to get it together for this engine to really start rolling and going for this team? And, you know, I had to really sit back and think about it because I've always said this team will go as far as Brandon Dawson allows this team to go. Brandon Dawson, of course, he is the workhorse of this squad. I mean, looking at his rebound numbers, he's still leading the Big Ten as far as rebounding percentage is concerned. And again, once he gets his offense going as well, I mean, and again, Brandon Dawson isn't the guy who can create his own offense. You can't give Brandon Dawson the basketball and expect him to make things happen, to make magic happen. He's a garbage man. He is at his best either in transition or playing off of missed shots, going for that rebound and putting it back up. That's who Brandon Dawson is. But there is another player who has not performed up to expectations in my eyes, and that is Denzel Valentine. I'm calling Denzel Valentine out because I tell you what, the ceiling for Denzel Valentine is one that in certain games you look at and say, wow, it's really, really high. His vision on the court is through the roof. I mean, I tell you what, he's improved on his jump shot. But I tell you what, these last few games and throughout this stretch, he has not been that impressive. Now, granted, he has gotten foul trouble at certain instances. His defense could be better. And I tell you what, Denzel Valentine, though, is a player who can be great. But I think it's all mental with Denzel. So, if anything, I'm looking for Denzel from here on out to start producing more on both ends of the court. I really, really think that Denzel could be a better player than what he's shown so far this season. So we'll see. Again, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 is the number to call in. Right now, we have a caller right now. I believe Bob is on line one. Bob, how you doing?
Hey, well, I'd like to say great, but not. I've been down since Saturday and having a tough time recovering.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Bob.
You have just touched on a couple of things that have been in my mind. Number one, zone defense. Judd did well with that matchup zone, and I'm wondering because of the talent we have, if darn it, we should have used it. When you got one guy out with an injury against Nebraska, they get another starter thrown out, another guy's got two fouls in the first half. If a zone defense, we should have just concentrated on using it, and we could have put that game away. The other issue is Valentine. I hate to be down on anybody, but he's not doing the job I expected. We're getting hurt underneath, not driving in like Cleaves and other guys did, getting fouled, making the basket. So you have touched on exactly why I'm down.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, there. Yeah, and you know, again, and looking at the preseason reports, and I remember, you know, being at Media Day down at the Breslin Center and talking to each individual players. I mean, one interview that I really specifically remember, Bob, is when I sat down with Matt Costello. And Costello and Valentine, I mean, they were like peanut butter and jelly that entire summer in the offseason, working out with each other. And he talked about how Denzel was such a gym rat and fine-tuning his game. But I tell you what, sometimes throughout games, Denzel seems to check out mentally for me, Bob. And it seems as though he relies on that jump shot a little too much. But I agree with you. I guess we're on the same wavelength this afternoon, my man. It's about there. All right. Well, yeah, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite, of course, the man behind the glass, our outstanding engineer here on Current Sports, Alex Shark. How you doing, Alex?
Yeah, it's pretty cold again, man, and we're lucky we didn't get that storm that Rutgers is getting, huh?
We're dodging bullets like Neo from The Matrix, man.
Dodging
I'm telling you.
And hey, man, you're getting pretty strong. Rattle Man's going to have some trouble talking to you today.
Yeah, I've been hitting the gym. Folks, with Alex Summer, I've been hitting Planet Fitness pretty hard, man, and I can feel the gains coming. I feel like the Hulk right now, dude. I'm feeling good. Getting my body in shape, all right? But I got to ask you, Alex, I mean, when you talk about this MSU men's basketball team, I mean, what have your thoughts been? Because you didn't get a chance to weigh in yesterday. I mean, what has your overall outlook been for this team? Where does the problem foundationally lie at?
Yeah, and that's the thing, Al. I think there are too many little problems to pinpoint to really say that there's one big problem. I think the point is that there's no, like you said, there isn't really a true leader on this team, and Joe Rexroad agreed with you how that was the big thing. No one's really taking charge. You don't know what you're going to get.
On the court,
on the offensive
side. Because I tell you
what,
you know, we've been in locker rooms, man. I tell you what, the chemistry of this team and, you know, Denzel's personality and Trice's personality, I mean, they are very assertive. I mean, we've heard stories about Travis Trice calling out certain teammates. I mean, the leadership in practice and in the locker room seems to be there, but we're just not seeing it in games. It seems as though when Trice or Valentine struggles, it's a trickle-down effect. The team struggles, you know what I mean? And that confidence kind of goes out the window. So, yeah, from a leadership perspective on the court, I agree.
Yeah, and the other thing, I think the one big aspect that you touched on a little bit throughout the week, but it hasn't been really that talked about, is the defense. Mm-hmm. In the Indiana game, it was a stingy lockdown defense. You haven't seen a lot of that post-Indiana. I mean, looking at the past games, you saw a lot of penetration and kickout. A lot of guys weren't stepping up to guard the man on the three-point arc. But at the same time, a lot of teams have been shooting very well against the Spartans, too. Don't forget that. I mean, over the last couple games, all the teams have been shooting well. And the Spartans sometimes, they're shooting okay, but not maybe as well as the other team. So overall, man, a lot of issues to point out. I think defensively they have some things to tweak offensively, but I think it's a question mark, man. I don't think there's an answer.
Folks, what do you think? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's shift gears now to our next topic before we get to our guest. I've been meaning to bring this up for quite some time now, Alex. We just, the way the ebb and flows of the show have gone this past week, I mean, we just have not gotten to it, but I want to dedicate some time to it right now because I think that it's a really intriguing and one of those stories that kind of opened the door and give you a peek into a lot of things that we all thought about in college, at least for me, as a student, Alex. Now, the NCAA's head of enforcement told the Chronicle's Brad Wolverton that it is investigating 20 schools for academic misconduct. Now, according to the report, the cases being investigated are in various stages, from a preliminary inquiry to schools waiting to hear back from the Committee on Infractions. Now, some of the alleged infractions concern athletes receiving impermissible assistance from professors, academic advisors, or people not connected with an athletic department. Now, the NCAA, of course, declined to name any of the schools they are investigating, but says 18 of them are in Division I, with one each in Division II and Division III. Now, you know, Alex, and we've briefly hit on this. I remember last summer we briefly talked about this topic about, you know, student athletes and whether or not certain student athletes, depending on what sport they play, receive special treatment in the classroom. I don't know about you, but I tell you what, you know, I went to MSU. I came to MSU in 2008, graduated in 2012. And, you know, I tell you what, when I would go to class, you know, I had a lot of athletes in my classes, whether it be basketball players, whether it be football players. And you know what? There was always this thing because, I took a lot of sports classes because my concentration was sports broadcasting. And, you know, I had a few athletes in my classes. Now, these athletes who I had in my class, I'm not naming any names, they were great students. I mean, they would show up to class on time, you know, and but I would hear on the other end of things how certain friends of mine would have certain athletes in other classes and how they wouldn't show up on time. They really didn't think that they took academics really seriously, if you will. And I granted, you know, maybe a lot of them don't. I mean, let's be honest here. When you have the talent that a lot of these athletes have, I mean, a lot of them have that one and done or 2 years and done mentality. And a lot of them have the talent to do so. You know, take a Gary Harris, for example. I mean, Gary Harris was tremendously gifted on the basketball court and had that certain skill set that allowed him to make that leap and be a high draft pick in the NBA draft. Certainly, there are a lot of athletes that have, that come in with the mentality, and I get it. Trust me. I mean, looking on the other end of the spectrum, I mean, let's just say I was 6 foot six and had tremendous athletic ability and had had all these schools coming after me. Yeah, I'm thinking about making millions at the next level. I think that sounds pretty good right about now. Academics certainly might take a back seat. Certainly, I get that mentality. And again, but just on the rumor mill, though, I mean, that was always the rumor, though. I mean, whether or not athletes even care about academics and whether or not do they get a pass in the classroom, because that is always a discussion. Now, there have been, I want to talk about the facts here, because I want to lay out the facts here first. Other schools have been caught, Alex. It's really interesting because if you go back to really not even that far in recent months, at least four schools have come under the NCAA's ire, including North Carolina. You guys know this story. We actually had it in our current Sports Quick Hit headliners. They found that advisors guided athletes to take classes that they did not have to show up for and receive grades to help keep them eligible. Now, the last summer, the NCAA reopened its 2011 investigation of academic irregularities at that school, at North Carolina. Now, Weber State, it's another incident that came up. They were placed on 3 years probation and had scholarships reduced in its football program after finding that a math instructor helped players cheat on quizzes and tests. And last but certainly not least, another fact here, the NCAA suspended Georgia's swimming coach Jack Borelli for 9 meets and placed him on a 1-year recruiting restriction after he arranged for an athlete to enroll a student in a course defying athletic administrators' wishes. Now, the school was also fined $5,000. Now, this happens. This happens. I'm not saying that it happens at Michigan State. I'm not saying that it happens at U of M or Western and so on and so forth. I'm just going on what we know here. And again, this is just a peek into a window that possibly puts other schools into that bunch as well. Now, again, and also the fact that we even have these three examples to go on, it just shows me that money trumps everything. Folks, over the years, we've seen college football, college basketball just kind of grow immensely in popularity. And we all know, in sports, popularity breeds dollar signs. Point blank, period. Where there's an interest, there will be coverage. And where there's coverage, there will be advertisers. And, of course, we know what advertisers bring. Moolah. They bring moolah to the table, folks. And to have, and this is where it starts to get sticky, because when you bring that type of money to a realm like college athletics, to student-athletes who are students, they don't get a dime of this. And, again, it goes back to the conversation whether or not student-athletes should be paid. This all is a revolving circle, a revolving door that ties hand in hand with one another. And, you know, with that, you know, these athletes are placed on a pedestal. You constantly see them on TV. Their names are on ESPN all the time. And with that attention comes a certain, you know, a certain mantra that these athletes, they ideally become famous. I mean, Johnny Football is a perfect example of that. I mean, when he was in college, I mean, who didn't know about Johnny Football? I'm pretty sure it was a fiasco of him rocking on campus just trying to get to class, let alone try to sit through a 1 hour or 2 hour session. I mean, it was unbelievable because his name, his face is everywhere. You start to place these students on a pedestal that really, if you want to really get down and dirty with the conversation, it starts in high school with the whole recruitment of them. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if Johnny Football is bringing dollar signs to the university, if his jersey and if his whole aura is doing that, you better believe that if he's not doing well in the classroom and if possibly there's, you know, if he's in jeopardy of not playing that Saturday, maybe some strings might get pulled a little bit. I would not be surprised, folks. Is it fair? Heck no. Point blank, period. No, it's not fair to other students who go to class and bust their butts. But at the end of the day, I always say it's all about the Benjamins, man. And again, if it's just happening at North Carolina, Weber State, and Georgia, I'm pretty sure this is going on in other universities. I'm just saying. Alex, quick thoughts before we hit the break.
Yeah, my thought is, what took so long? I mean, you saw a lot of cases. There have been all these kinds of investigations. I'm just wondering what took so long. And back to your point about what you saw as a student, at least for the sports journalism students that we've seen, I haven't seen anything unfair. And like you said, you hear the other side of it where athletes aren't there on time and things like that. But what we both really don't know, and even those students that see these other athletes that are tardy and are unprofessional in the classroom, what all of us don't know is what kind of help they get in the advising center, in the Clara Bell Smith Student Center, all that and more. So there's only so much you really know, and that's the thing is students have to pay for tutors. If I have a class and I need trouble and I need help with the class, I have to pay for a tutor. Athletes don't have to pay for anything. They get tutors to their disposal. So
right.
At the same time, that could be considered, quote-unquote, unfair in a way, regardless of the fact that they might be getting additional help.
And I think it all depends on the student-athlete because, I've had no interaction with any student-athlete here, and we've had interns on the show here before who are members of the football team, and they've been outstanding. Outstanding. They show up on time. They do hard work. I have never seen or experienced that here at Michigan State University, but we've seen it happen outside of the personal realm other than having students work right here on the show. I mean, Kenny Kaminsky, perfect example. I mean, if you look at what happened in that whole situation, him not because Tom Izzo came out and said in the presser, he said, hey, he's not handling his business in the classroom. Point blank, period. And you saw how quick his shelf life went here at Michigan State University. It happens. There are certain athletes out there, I'm sure, in college who believe that, yeah, man, I'm on a pedestal here. You know what I mean? I've heard it pulled before. I've heard it pulled before, definitely, from outside of personal realms. So, hey, it's interesting. I'm going to see. We'll see what happens with this investigation. Again, there's 18 schools currently being investigated under the NCAA. And there's also one Division II school and one Division III school. Going to be interesting to see how that story pans out. Again, Sports Illustrated actually broke that a few weeks ago if you want to check out that article. All right, folks, let's start our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking with the man, the myth, the legend, Ronald Mann, MMA fighter, folks. He's going to talk about the acquisition of the welterweight championship belt, winning in emphatic fashion down at the Lansing Center this past Saturday. We'll talk about that. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports, ladies and gents. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, folks, in just a minute, we'll be inviting Ronald Mann, MMA fighter and amputee, who recently acquired the welterweight championship. How about that? He got a big win at the Lansing Center this past Saturday, a win in which, again, he broke his opponent's arm. I mean, I can't imagine being a fighter. And, if I was a fighter, I would be ridiculously nervous before a fight. I mean, knowing that I am going to go into this cage and face an individual who is trying to do great bodily harm to me. I mean, hey, I'm from the D, don't get me wrong. We're real hardcore, okay? But still, at the end of the day, that's a pretty nerve-wracking thing. I don't care who you are, okay? Doing something willingly, going into a fight like that. I mean, wow. I have great respect for fighters, whether it be mixed martial artists, whether it be boxers, whoever it may be, folks. Because it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes a lot of courage to do that, folks. Well, he's just walked in the studio, ladies and gents. Again, he's a great friend of Current Sports. Now, to go back and recount this really briefly here, folks. Again, this past Saturday, Ronald Mann, he took the cage inside of the Lansing Center and battled with Jimmy Melton for the MMA welterweight championship. Now, I actually, happened to, that night, I happened to be at home doing some work. I just left the gym, you know, getting my Al Diesel on. And I crack open my laptop. And right on my news feed, I found out the outcome of that fight by looking at Ronald's Facebook page, which read, and this is the exact status he actually posted on Facebook, quote, "Hell of a fight. It was a war. I'll post more tomorrow. I need to go to sleep tonight. I hurt so bad. But I won the 170 and broke his arm. Legitimized my career and probably the best fight of my life. Love my family for being in my corner." That is word for word what Ronald posted after that fight had ensued, and I am excited always to talk to the man, the myth, the legend. He is right here inside of the WKR radio studios. Ronald, man, how you doing?
How you doing today? Thank you for having me here.
Thanks a lot, my friend. Again, I just recounted briefly this incredible matchup between you and Jimmy Melton. Again, I tell you what, you broke the man's arm, Ronald. I mean, that's unbelievable. First off, because I think this is really interesting. I want to take a different spin on this interview. Now, you and I have talked about how you got into MMA, about the motorcycle accident. A lot of people who follow current sports know your background, but right. I want to talk about fighting throughout this interview. Now, okay. You know, before you take the cage, and again, it takes a lot of courage to do that because, you know, I have a lot of respect for what you guys do. You go into a fight knowing the risk, knowing that, man, I mean, great bodily harm can ensue on your end of the fight. What goes through your head before you take the cage, Ronald?
When I get ready for the cage, like, I practice Zen Buddhism. That's what the tattoo on my arm means. It means emptiness, qual, emptiness, and it's where I try to center myself. Anybody who says that they're not scared of going in the cage is a liar. I guarantee it. I've done it many times. And even at this point, after so many years of fighting and banging, there's still that moment of uncertainty where you have to break past that. You have to center your mind, center your body and your soul into one point and be empty. You
right.
need to flow like water. That's what Bruce Lee talked about. And so that's when I go ahead and get in there, you'll see me, like, my face is blank. Some guys, they jump around, they're all animated and crazy. That shows a weakness on their part because they're expending the energy unnecessarily. When you can walk in there and be empty of mind and body and walk into that the cage, into that zone, and put your will onto another person, yeah, it's a whole different level of Zen right there.
So
yeah.
This fight that took place on Saturday, I mean, what was going through your head, Ronald? How do you get yourself into that zone? Is there a certain genre of music you listen to? I mean, how does that process go for you?
I like Skrillex. He's a dubstep out of Detroit. It really gets me going. Bangarang is my favorite song.
Out of the
song.
D. Shout
yeah,
out. All
right. For D, right? That's my family right there. So, you know, it's one of those, like, before, when we're warming up, you warm up again and again and again, especially later fighters, because you never know when the fights are going to end. So you've got a certain amount of time where you get there, you have your rules meeting, weigh in, doctors and everything. But then you've got to deal with that amount of time. And that's really the hardest part of the fight, is getting to the cage. Once you're in the cage and it goes, that bell dings, it's just a war. It's violent. It's crazy. Things happen so quickly. You don't have time to think about what's going. If you don't flow, you're a dead man walking.
So before, of course, the bell rings and you guys go at it with one another, I gotta ask, I mean, what is that feeling like? I mean, is it an immediate lock-in? Do you think about, are you trying to end the fight as quick as possible is what I'm asking?
When I get in there, the man's gonna try to harm me, and I'm gonna be trying to harm him with prejudice as quickly as I possibly can. We're talking about a sport, but this is, you know, hockey's violent, boxing is violent, football is violent. I mean, look at our Spartans.
Exactly.
Their D is violent, but this is in your face and raw. It doesn't get any clearer cut than this. And so you have all those thoughts going through your head. This is what could happen. This is what could happen. You have to push those down and replay in your mind what's going to happen. And you get a mental image of the exact things you're going to do. Now, that changes when you get in there and you get punched in the face. Everything goes, your plan goes straight out the window after that. But when you start off, like, you have to be so in touch with your inner self and in contact of what you're going to do. I'm going to put my will upon this person. I'm going to force them into submission with my bare hands. And whether that be through punches, kicks, knockout, strikes, submissions, broken arm,
wow.
It happens. It's a reality. But you need to be able to, it's hard to focus yourself because you have all that chaos going on. Plus the other fighters are coming in and out. Some of them are broken up real bad. You have to look at them and go, that could be me. Realize that, accept
that. So when you see the fights beforehand, and you see individuals come out that ring beaten and battered, possibly knocked out, mm-hmm. I mean, does that do something to your psyche?
It does. It puts a fire inside you. Like, there's a certain blood fire you get. Like, your whole body tingles because, like, there's a primal urge there. But it's also, it is scary. You look at another guy get his face broken up, and you're like, whoa, man, this is going to be hard. This is not a game. This isn't a gimme. This isn't play acting. We're in there dropping real elbows on somebody. And that's, right. You know, you also have to have respect for another fighter. That's Jimmy Milton. I didn't get to talk to him after the fight. You know, he had to leave right away. But I have so much respect for that man for fighting against me in a cage. You know, that's another human being that you're fighting against, another soul, it's another person. And to treat me with respect of a fighter, not a disabled fighter, just a fighter. You know, Ron DeLeon has done the same thing. He's never put adaptive rules on me. He's never asked me to take a gimme fight. He has a respectable organization because he presents himself and he demands a high standard of his fighters.
Right.
And so when you weigh in, when you have your blood work, when you get chested by medical, when you come up and I talk to the guy before the fight and say, this is the leg I'm going to be using to fight you with. This is the padded up prosthesis to make it safe for both fighters. If it comes off, we keep fighting. Just like if you lose your mouthpiece, we keep fighting. I don't want to be an adaptive fighter. I want to be just a fighter. And Ron lets me do that. Jimmy Milton put it on me hard. And like that war right there, it truly legitimized my career because some people question me like, oh, you know, are you just a gimme? Are you just a gimmick with a one leg? And I was getting beaten in that first round. I'm not ashamed to say that. He took me down. He's a great wrestler out of Murcielago camp. Mm-hmm. They're hard wrestlers down there. But I defended well, kept my head about me. In that raging storm, you've got to focus. And you hear the violence around you, but you've got to focus and stay calm. So you can't panic because that's it. You'll be done. You get taken out. That second bell came, and I was looking at him, and I said, there was a moment of hesitation where I said, I don't want to do this. But you've got to stop that. That's every animal, every human doesn't want to fight. You've got to stop that and squish it down. And I went in there, and I said, all right, trust your skills. This is what you trained for. And obviously it worked out, you know.
Ronald, we're also going to open up our phone lines. Anybody that wants to throw a question out at Ronald, if anything is on your mind, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, folks, we're talking with Ronald Mann, MMA fighter, and now champion. How about that? The belt is also sitting right next to him, folks. Again, we will post that on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, and you better believe I'm taking a picture with that thing and posting on my Instagram, okay? So look out for that. Now, going back to, you know, you talked about Ronald legitimizing your career.
Yeah.
Why did this fight, specifically against this opponent, Jimmy Milton, legitimize your career, and why not the ones in the past? Why was this one so important to you?
The first couple fights for me were really powerful because I didn't know if I could do it. I was on the Army Taekwondo team, and I won the career-wide championship. I knew that I could fight. But when I came out of the military and lost my leg, yeah, I felt less than. You know, I felt weaker then. And the way people looked at me and treated me was different. And I'd never experienced that before. And it was so in your face. People wanted to care for you. Even though they wanted to care for you, it felt like weakness. It's something I had to push down inside me and be accepting of the team. Like, everybody sees the fighter in the cage. They don't see the whole team around them, the doctors, the process, the teammates, the friends, the family, the girl, the guy, whoever you're with. They've got to be with you that whole time, and it's a hard, hard game.
Right.
Jimmy Milton was a star athlete. And coming out of DeWitt football, DeWitt always has a real good team. He was their quarterback in 2012. He's an animal. The kid is a beast.
I knew that name sounded familiar. Yep. I because you know when I read that and typed it up actually in our intro, I'm like, Jimmy Milton, that sounds sounds really, really familiar. I think I covered him in high school actually.
He is an excellent, excellent athlete. And like, yeah. I said, you know, much respect and love to him for going in the cage with me. It's one of those things, like the first couple fights when I won them, it was stunning. Like, nobody had ever done this before. I was the first one to ever fight as an amputee. I had to sneak into my tournaments. I had to wear long pants and pad my leg up and make it look like a real leg so I could get in there and just sneak in.
Right.
Eventually, I gained enough notoriety and publicity that people started accepting me. And it was, I've had people ask me, will you do a cripple fight? Will you fight this one-legged guy or this guy with no arm, but you can't wear your prosthesis and you guys got to crawl each other towards the mat? Like, that's the most disrespectful, nasty thing anybody could ever do to me. As right. a fighter and as a right. human being, like, I'm trying to show ability, something much higher than just myself.
Yeah, it sounds like a circus. I mean,
I'm not, right, and that's the thing. That. Some people look at it and are like, man, this is just a circus act. But let them come on the mat with me for a couple rounds, and right. I'll show them what a circus is, you know?
Right.
Everybody that I've fought has, after the fight at least, give me respect and love because we're in there as pure fighters. We're there banging on each other. and we can at least give each other respect as fighters. I may not like you when I'm done. We may not be hanging out and, you know, catching beers together, but we're still an elite family of fighters. There's not many people that can go through this, and it's a really emotionally and physically destructive and hard, long path that you have to get to elevate your mind and your soul and your body, getting your body hardened for this. It's something that no other sport compares to it. It's a sport of kings.
Now, I want to get to the preparation for a fight in just a sec, Ronald, but I want you to take us inside the cage real briefly here to that moment on Saturday night against Jimmy. How in the world did you end up breaking Jimmy's arm? How did that go?
The second round, when I came out, I've been training with an Olympic-level boxer with Jose and Val now, and out of American Martial Arts and Fitness Academy, we've got a really good class of trainers there. Dan Harbeck does my Muay Thai. I teach the catch wrestling there. So we've got a real high class of fighters. And I'm really working my hands, really lighting up my hands. And one of my training partners just before the fight said, "I've never seen your hands this fast." And I was like, just focus on the hands, work on that. And you look in the first round, before he takes me down and smothers me, I'm just lighting him up. Mm-hmm. The second round, I said, that's the same thing. Just go out there, trust your hands. Trust your teammates and trust your training. And I went out there, I threw at him, threw a real hard kick to the body, lifted him up a little bit, but he caught my leg and pulled me down to the ground again with a nice double leg takedown. As soon as I hit the ground, it flashed in my mind, I can't take another round of this. I was already bleeding real bad from a huge cut above my eye.
How did that happen? Because I'm looking here.
Take a look at the eyes.
Boy.
It's tough.
Folks, you can't see it, but Ronald actually on his left eye has two cuts, one above the left eye and one right below it. How did that happen?
In the first round, Jimmy took me to the ground soon after. It was about 30 seconds into the fight. He took me to the ground, and right after that, he pulled back. The kid is so strong. Pulled back. I couldn't stop him. And hit me with an elbow to the eye. Oh. And I remember my eye, I heard a pop, and my eye exploded. And blood just poured into my eye. So once you get blood in your eye, you can't see to defend yourself. So I'm trying to press up against his body to protect my head, because if it gets too bad, they will stop the fight on you. Mm-hmm. So I had to protect that eye somehow.
You had a cut man in the corner, right?
Cut man's in the corner, but once you're going, you're going.
You can't
blood
stop
everywhere.
Around.
It's getting slippery, you're sweating, you're bleeding, you can't see, you're kind of panicking a little bit, but you know, you got to fight through that mentally and keep yourself focused. So that first round, I was trying to get him off me. I actually reversed him and swept him once, but he got me right back into a mount. And I was like, I can't believe this kid. He's an animal.
Right.
Much respect to him on that level. But I kept persevering. And the perseverance is where everything pays off. If you keep going and keep going and keep going, and nobody's going to beat you down, that's where you win. It's not that initial 30 seconds. That's a puncher's chance. They may knock you out in 30 seconds. That's just a puncher's chance. The long fights where people go ahead and battle back and forth, like I was down. And that second round, when he took me down, I was like, oh, my God, I can't take another round of this. And so it clicked in my head, catch wrestling, attack, 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 attack. And so he started pounding on me. I went for an arm bar on his right side. And what that does in catch wrestling, we teach lock flow, not just single attack locks. That's like just throwing a jab, 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 jab. That's not going to work. Jab cross hook is going to knock somebody out. So we teach lock flow in catch wrestling.
Right.
So I swung to his right side, trying to arm bar him, which he has to block with his left arm. Lets me swing around to the left side. I'm on the bottom, on the guard. My legs are wrapped around him. He's pushing down, getting ready to hit me with an elbow, and I throw my leg over his head to put him in an arm bar from the bottom. Well, this big kid, he picks me straight up off the ground. I'm 175 pounds. He picked me clean up off the ground. It is holding me in the air. I'm hanging upside down, my legs wrapped around his neck, trying to get an arm bar on him. And I pull back as hard as I can, and nothing. He doesn't budge. I'm like, you're kidding me. There was a moment of hesitation. I was like, you're kidding me. I just put my whole strength into this kid's arm.
So your jaw was kind of on the floor at that moment.
Well, wow. Then so the next lock flow, so I've gotten my lock secured. The next thing is I slip my left arm in, freeze my right arm. I'm still holding his arm out, extending his arm out, and I hit him twice in the face, and it broke his nose, and he's bleeding out. But what that does, the reason I do that is I'm not going to knock him out there from there, but it extends him back. He raises back, and that extends his arm out a little bit, and that helps me secure the elbow lock. So there's a thought process behind this. It's scientific. It's not just a violent sport. It's scientific. You look at the way the football players play. They play scientifically. They don't just play football.
There's a method to the madness.
There is a reason behind everything they do. There's a reason. And when you're a catch wrestler, there's a reason behind everything you do. Not waste energy, just pure form. So when I hit him, he raised back. The kid is, Jimmy Milton is so strong. He pulled up and lifted his arm up with me. It didn't extend his elbow out. He didn't tap. His body finally gave out. There's only so much pressure bones will take.
Right.
And my 175 pounds straight hanging off of his arm, plus pulling on it as hard as I can, he He didn't tap. I didn't have time to stop, and the ref didn't have time to quit. His bones just snapped in his forearm, clean through his forearm, just snapped. I've seen it twice before. I hope Jimmy makes a recovery because I've never seen anybody come off a break like that. He's a strong, young, talented kid. He could make a comeback off this. But as soon as it broke, he fell forward, and he hit me once, and as soon as I felt it break across my leg, I let go. I'm not there to destroy anybody. You know, I'm not there to wound anybody unnecessarily. I'm there to win the fight. And as soon as it broke, I knew the fight was done. So it's, you'll see us in the video. He falls on top of me. I roll out from underneath him. I'm done. I stand up. I walk away. And the ref jumps in. The ref actually, Vance, came into me later and said, hey, thanks for stopping that fight. Because I didn't have to. I could have kept going and kept breaking his arm.
Yeah.
But as soon as I felt it pop, there's no reason to keep going. The fight's over. It's done. You know, we're there as competitors. We're not there to hurt each other unnecessarily. We're not there to destroy somebody's career. That's not what we're there for. We're there to show the highest level of martial arts we have. To me, if I break your arm, you're not fighting anymore. You're done. Fight's done. So I was done.
So since that moment, Jimmy, of course, was rushed to the hospital and got treated, I'm sure. Have you reached out to him? Have you talked to him? You know what his status is right now?
You know, I tried to touch him in cage and talk to him real quick and say thank you, and we weren't able to contact you. You know, your body goes into shock, and they kept us separated, and there was some squabbling between camps and stuff. There always is, you know. Nobody wants to see their fighter lose, but he actually got a hold of me last night and said, you know, there's a lot of stuff being talked right now, but just wanted to let you know there was a good fight. His quote was, we have some unfinished business, brother. But
and so he wants to fight you again.
He wants to fight me again.
Right.
And I texted him back, you know, late last night. I said, you know, there's no disrespect lost from my end. I don't know what's going around, but it's not me, because I respect everybody I fight against. You're coming in against somebody that's an unknown, a disabled fighter.
What disrespect was he talking about?
I guess just people talking about, oh, I broke his arm and I tried to rip it. Well, that's not what happens.
Okay. Oh, so using that excessive force that you talked about, but you there was no need for it. Let go.
As soon as it popped, I let go. There's no reason to continue on. And that happens. I mean, I've had my knee blown. The guy let me go as soon as it happened. I broke another guy's ankle. As soon as it popped, I let go. I don't take any pride in harming people like that. This is sport. You know, in the street, if I'm going to do something in the street, it's with prejudice because I'm protecting my family. Mm-hmm. But in here, it's sport. There's no reason to continue to harm a person. There's no reason to attack them after they've been down. You know, we all know that. And that's respect to the other fighters.
Well, that's great that you guys talked then. And he wants to get back in the ring. But you've never seen anybody come back from an injury like that.
I have not. He's young and healthy and a very talented fighter, very strong physically and mentally. I could tell, because even after his arm was broke, he didn't just lay there and suck it up and cry. He got up, and I was like, wow, dude. Like, he laid there for about 3 or 4 minutes because they checked him out, and you could see he was starting to go into shock a little bit. Mm-hmm. But he stood up and walked out of the ring on his own power without any assistance. I'm like, that's a tough, tough kid.
Wow. Riveting stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, again, Ronald Mann, MMA fighter, who is, again, coming off a win against Jimmy Melton. Ronald, only a few minutes left in our show today. But I got to ask you, you know, what's the next mountain to climb for you now? And also, if you can briefly hit on what your body goes through after a fight like that. I mean, what have these past 2 or 3 days been like for you?
You know, I went out and I ate pizza on Saturday night.
Nice. That's a way to celebrate, right?
People don't realize, like, pizza, that's a glorious thing because I haven't had it for 2 months. And then Sunday morning, my birthday was January 6th. I couldn't have birthday cake.
Oh, happy belated, my man.
Thank you. Amanda brought me a piece of cake. I put it in my freezer. I had my birthday cake January 25th. And it's those little things, like, to be able to eat a nice meal, you know, and I ate 6 times on Sunday, but Saturday night I had pizza. That's like those little things. I woke up the next day, something happened to my shoulder. I woke up and I was like, oh, my shoulder hurts so bad. And I opened my eye. I say that because my left eye was swollen and crusted shut with blood. And I was like, oh, my goodness, my face. And I looked over and I saw the belt, because I slept with the belt next to me in bed.
Wow, wow.
And like that right there, like, I've shown people that we are just as able as anybody else, you know, to be able to elevate myself to this level. You know, running is a repetitive motion, and distance running is intense. Yeah. Triathletes are intense. You know, the preparation they have to take to put their body through that grueling sport, but this is the sport of kings. You're moving in every direction, every plane, every force is being put on that prosthetic. Jan Stokoza built that prosthetic for me specifically so I could fight. Without him, I couldn't do this. Mm-hmm. He's part of my team. I woke up that next day and I realized, like, I've reached that next level of self. Like, I've finally accomplished being a champion. Ron DeLeon is the first one to let me fight for a championship belt. Everybody else would let me fight, but not for championship. And I had to earn it, and to win it, not by just winning, but by getting beaten and coming back and keep fighting, keep fighting, keep fighting. Submit the guy, broke his arm. legitimize my face and his broken arm and our spirits together, legitimize what I'm doing as a fighter.
So now that you have the belt, is now, I guess, the next challenge to defend that title?
We'll see. Ron De Leon is talking about the second week in April is going to be in the next fights. And I for sure will be there. I mean, that's now it's mine. This is my belt. Nobody
that's
can
yours.
Ever take that
that's
away from
your
me.
That's your baby.
That's mine. So now, you know, we're looking at some boxing out of New York as well.
Okay.
As long as people are willing to sponsor me and promote me through Ability, you know, and not treat me as a circus show, is look at me as an athlete, as a pure, not a disabled athlete, like I said, just as an athlete. As long as they treat me like that, you know, Bud Counts and Ron De Leon and my AMMAFA team, Ability Mixed Martial Arts, Giannis DeCosa, these people look at me just as an athlete. They don't look at me as anything else.
Right.
And that's what makes it that different level. You don't find a lot of people that are willing to do that. A lot of sponsors, I'm just looking for sponsors now. A lot of people, I won't take on sponsors because they want to treat me as that, oh, he's special. No, I'm not special. I'm the same as every other fighter out there. I just work my...
Work your butt off. That's
butt
right.
off to get here.
We can say butt on WKR. I do believe we can say that on WKR, right? Yes.
I worked my butt off to get here. You know, I put in the sweat, blood, and tears, and my family's been there with me. My friends, like, you are my family, dude.
Definitely.
Like, you're there with me, and that's the people I need around me to keep me going for this. This is a higher elevation of what we are. It's bigger than me. It's bigger than any of us. It shows the rest of the world. We have people all over the world who see these things, see the ability that we have, and make it to the next level themselves.
Gotta love that. I tell you what, Runaway, yeah, I mean, you definitely are family here at WKAR. We love having you on, and keep us abreast on what's ensuing when it comes to your next fight, your next bout. We'll have you on again to talk about it. Always a pleasure, folks. Ronald Mann, MMA fighter, Ronald Mann, and also Walter Wade champion, Ronald Mann. Again, we will post the picture of the belt. I know my Twitter's blowing up. A lot of you guys want to see it, okay? We will post that right after we get off the air at 2 o'clock. Only 3 minutes left in the show, so Ronald, stick around. We got to get a photo of that. Folks, again, tomorrow, we got another hot show for you. I'm definitely excited. We got another hot interview for you. Folks, if you don't know who this man is, I tell you what, you definitely want to bring out your Google or historic NFL reference book, Michael Haynes. That's right. Does that name ring a bell? Michael Haynes will be joining me on the show. He has had one fantastic career in the NFL. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer, battled back from it, and is now promoting men's health. He'll talk about his battle with cancer and also give us a sort of Super Bowl preview. And we'll also be talking with Diamond Leung, former writer for MLive.com. He used to cover Michigan State sports right here in the area, but now he's covering arguably the best NBA team in the business. That's right, the Golden State Warriors. He'll talk about their incredible run and so much more. So you'll want to keep it locked. Do not miss tomorrow's show. As always, folks, it's been a pleasure. Again, shout out to Ronald Mann. Shout out to our fantastic students who work out on the show. Also, Alex Shark, our fantastic engineer of Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic Tuesday. Stay warm and be easy, people.